Dr. Stan Wong is founder and CEO of Thymmune Therapeutics, a biotechnology company developing a thymic cell engineering platform to restore normal immune function in aging and disease. And with that, let me start the interview. Hello, Dr. Wong. You are the founder and CEO of Thymmune Therapeutics. So welcome to Modern Health Planet. Thank you so much for joining us today. So
thank you.
Could you take a few minutes to kind of introduce yourself and your background from kind of Cambridge and George Church's lab, and what led you to found Thymmune?
Yeah, no, well, first off, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to talk about kind of the work that we're doing, how we seek to impact patients and ultimately health or aging. And how I got to this path is a little unorthodox. I didn't really think I would be working on applications towards aging over the long term. By training, I'm originally a physician scientist, did an MD at Columbia, New York, did a PhD at Cambridge, UK, along with spent some time at NIH outside of Washington, DC. And my scientific background there was very much kind of stem cell biology, regenerative medicine, understanding a lot of the nitty-gritty fundamental science behind making ultimately better stem cells. And I did have ideas about how to ultimately apply that in a way in therapeutic advances. And I would say, kind of fast forwarding a little bit to working with George Church at Harvard, that's when a lot of these ideas started to really sprout and spring forward. At that point, we were applying CRISPR and cell and gene therapies, various other exciting technologies. And also, you know, following both the stem cell field and also the immunology field, I saw this really, to me, obvious and natural confluence of these technologies and fields towards saying, okay, beyond what people are already doing in T cells, CAR T cells, immune cell therapy, what if we could go even further upstream and work on the place in the body, the thymus, that actually trains T cells and gives you a functional immune system? So I would say that it's a confluence of these various different events, kind of watching as the scientific field has really been exploding in thymic biology, that stimulated my interest in working in this space.
First of all, kind of could you provide some background on what the thymus is and kind of help the audience understand why it's so important? Why is it so central?
Yeah. So the thymus is this fascinating tissue that you're born with, that sits in your chest, kind of on top of your heart, between your lungs. And its job as this kind of little bit of a fatty tissue and connective tissue is to train your T cells and give you a functional immune system. What we mean by that specifically is it actually takes cells derived from your bone marrow that migrate to the thymus, and then it allows them to be trained and matured into different types of T cells, you know, these really critical immune cells that you have in your body, through a process called positive and negative selection, that then allow these cells to ultimately recognize self versus non-self. So it's a really, really critical process of tuning the immune system and allowing your immune cells to know, you know, when to tolerate you and not attack you, and when it sees something foreign, that yes, indeed, it should be attacked. So that is just the absolutely fascinating role of the thymus. And just to add one more thing in there for you, Richard, despite us all being born with this tissue, we all lose it as a natural part of aging and disease. And that process starts even within the first several years of our lives and accelerates through the first, you know, 1 or 2 decades of our lives.
If you're having a vaccination, would the thymus be critical to that vaccine being successful?
It's a good question. So probably for the majority of us, before a certain age, so it was thought for a long time that, you know, the thymus was not really this critical or essential tissue because it fades so early in life. In fact, if you look at the scientific literature, they've always referred to the thymus as a vestigial organ. And to an extent, yes, it plays its key function and role early in life and allows you to create this diverse immune repertoire to recognize the self versus non-self. But what we're finding in the data, and what really became apparent with COVID especially, is towards the extremities of age, as individuals go beyond, say, 60, 70, 80, they have really declining immune function and declining responses to vaccines. And it's possible that the thymus and its involution and inability to help you create new T cells at that point could really be a key mechanism as to why folks are less responsive to even things like COVID vaccination.
Why do you see the thymus, and I guess immune, as like central to aging? I mean, you could have picked other organs that maybe were also key, but why did you pick the thymus specifically as the one to work on?
Yeah. So if we think about, you know, the myriad of different immune cells, tissues, and organs, they all have the important roles that they have in your functioning immune system. But if we think about the diverse types of cells that you need to have, you know, really functional, durable immunity, you know, we know that, for example, going back to vaccines, part of that key response is this adaptive response to generate antibodies. But then what we found, again, through COVID data, other vaccination data, is to have a really durable long-term response, you need robust cell-based immunity. And it turns out that in order to have good cell-based immunity, well, what are the tissues and organs that actually make those cells and train them and give them proper function? And it turns out one of those key organs is actually the thymus. So having a robust thymus, you know, we think could be quite useful, especially in aged individuals over time, where, yes, you generate that diverse immune repertoire of T cells early in life, but as we even lose those immune cells that your body created, we have no means currently to rejuvenate that function and give you a new wave of cells. With our thymic cell therapy, the idea is, well, if we can come in and give you a boost of new thymus, new T cells, what impact could we have on vaccine response, cancer response, pathogen response?
Kind of turning to thymune and the therapy that you are building. So can you talk about what you're working on there?
Yeah. So in principle, what we're building at Thymune is the ability to massively scale the production of thymic cells from a, you know, virtually unlimited source of stem cells, specifically human-induced pluripotent stem cells. And the technology that we've brought in-house and have expanded upon is utilizing a combination of single cell sequencing, machine learning, stem cell technologies, and genetic engineering to mass produce these thymic cells. Now, why does that even matter? It turns out there's already great clinical proof of concept for thymic cell therapies. In fact, there is already a FDA approved therapy. Specifically, there are conditions, genetic causes, where children can be born without a thymus. And when they're born without a thymus, they don't have functional T cells, they don't have a functional immune system, and it's completely fatal. They usually all die by the second year of life. There is an FDA-approved therapy where if you can give them thymus from another child, it saves their lives. But now you have to cut open another kid's chest, harvest the material, culture in a dish, and then surgically engraft it into the recipient children. Life-saving, but pretty difficult to really scale. And that's where we come in. Now, instead of using that primary cell source for another child, we could basically mass produce these cells off the shelf as Thy-100 from an unlimited cell source. That's the core technology that we have. We think we can apply it in everything from rare diseases through to a myriad of immune conditions and ultimately into supporting healthier aging.
So you're going to take somatic cells, I guess, and turn them into iPSCs. Right. And so is that right? Actually, that's a good point. Is that where you're getting your iPSCs is from?
So at our current stage, we're not actually in the business of making the iPS cells themselves. We're actually working with other partners that already have, you know, really robust, well-developed lines, have taken them into clinical grade manufacturing, have even taken these lines into clinical trials. So those are the starting cell sources that we have. Again, kind of more as an off-the-shelf supply. And what our company does is then take these high-quality iPS stem cell lines and then make the thymic cells from these lines. So what that means is right now we're focused on really this quote-unquote allogeneic off-the-shelf approach. Over the long term, we could consider autologous approaches. So taking your somatic cells, making your iPS cells, making your thymic cells, but for the field, we're watching a myriad of different developments from manufacturing to regulatory to really enable that path down the line.
Okay, so these stem cells don't induce an immune issue. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's one of the biggest areas of kind of study and work right now in the stem cell therapy field. Many folks are working on editing stem cells to make them less immunogenic. In our case, those types of edits can actually impair the function of the thymic cells that we make. But one of the very unique properties that you have with thymic cells, unlike many other cells, is the thymus trains your immunity. So we can actually utilize that basic principle to help train or retrain an immune system to be tolerant against the source starting iPS cell line, which is a very, very unique property that the thymus has that very few other cell types have. Now, that being said, clinically, we likely are going to start with lines to provide a closer match to patients in the initial applications to mitigate the risk of rejection.
Okay, so you're taking these iPSCs, which you're buying off the shelf, which seems like a great idea to me.
In a sense.
Okay, and then so then you are building them into a thymus. So are you building like a thymus? Because a thymus has a structure to it, right? So it's not just thymic cells.
Great point.
You have to. So do you build a thymus, or how does that work?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we and everyone in the field thought, and to an extent continue to think. But what we've found in our data so far, and you know, the early work has been published by our scientific co-founders, but in manufacturing these cells in a dish outside of the body, you basically create a population of cells in a bit of a progenitor state. And when you engraft them in vivo into an animal or ultimately into patients, they mature and they're actually able to form kind of a new thymus with a structure actually within the body. And we've been able to not only replicate this, but make it an even more robust process through the industrial engineering that we're doing. And in fact, for example, through the single cell sequencing, we found that one of the reasons we are able to do this is even in a dish, we're to an extent recapitulating the complexity of cell types that you see in the human thymus, even before we engraft the cells into, say, an animal. And of course, with an animal, those cells further mature, kind of form that thymic-like structure, and then are able to produce, you know, trained T cells. It's an absolutely fascinating process that, as we've really made the process more robust, we've been able to document further and further kind of the downstream effects of making these cells.
Interesting. So you have an iPSC and you treat it in a way that causes it to form a thymic cell. And then when you have like a dish of these, they kind of spontaneously start micro differentiating into the relevant components of a thymus. Would that be a very high-level description?
A way to think about it, similar to many different kind of iPS cell-based cell therapy technologies, yes, we start with that iPS cell line, and we take it through a series of inductions in a dish or ultimately in bioreactors, where through media components, small molecules, growth factors, et cetera, they're coaxed essentially through the developmental stages of the human thymus, all replicated outside of the body, to the point where they're forming clusters of these thymic-like cells of the diversity that we're interested in. So we're basically then able to provide for an animal or ultimately for a patient, you know, an injectable formulation of a suspension of aggregated cells that when implanted form kind of a new thymus.
Right. Okay. So I see where I was, way oversimplifying is like, oh, you turn it from iPS to a thymic, but because an iPS is something that would be in a fetus, then it's got to go through all the kind of steps of generation that would normally be required. Right. So you have to kind of lead it through those and then it forms.
That's right. We as you said, I like that. We're leading the cell through the developmental cues to the point where then it becomes kind of the thymic cells that we want to ultimately engraft as a product.
Okay, so you mentioned machine learning as one of the things that you're. So where does the machine learning come into this process?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, what is the reason why we've been able to, you know, rapidly accelerate experimental processes that took a decade or more in academic labs to bring to the point where we picked it up? And part of that has been by using single cell sequencing and machine learning to, part one, understand in exquisite detail what we're making in a dish, and then two, comparing it to single cell resolution data of the actual human thymus, and then asking the question of how can we make our product even better in mimicking the actual human thymus. So that's where the sequencing and machine learning comes in, is again, understanding what we're making and then creating predictions about how we can make our product more like the actual human thymus.
So you talked about training the thymus. So you're going to inject this thymus into someone, and then you have to train it not to reject itself, I guess, or to mark itself as being self rather than non-self. Could you talk a little bit about how that works? And because I saw that you also mentioned somewhere that you might be able to use this to create thymuses that would handle autoimmune conditions that people have.
So again, in this regard, we're taking advantage of some of the innate biology of the thymus, which is, I mentioned earlier, the positive and negative selection. And just to walk through what exactly that means at a high level, what that is when you have these free T cells that go into the thymus, they're just waiting for the thymus to be trained and kind of told and taught and educated how to recognize self versus non-self. During kind of positive selection, you're training these T cells to recognize basically a whole range of target antigens. And then during the negative selection process, before they leave the thymus, they're taught to say, okay, this is me. This is, you know, the antigens that represent your pancreas, your spleen, your different tissues. And when the thymus finds those cell types that could potentially attack yourself, it actually has this exquisite mechanism to, you know, self-destruct or to kill those cells, or turn them into other cells that go out and help you be tolerant against those antigens. So that is kind of the innate mechanism. And therefore, there is this fine balance that the thymus strikes between creating a diversity of T cells that can recognize foreign or, you know, potentially bad antigens, but then also help you tune your immune system so as not to attack yourself. In terms of our clinical products early on, we're in essence reconstituting deficient immune systems. Over the medium term, the autoimmune applications are, well, what if we could, you know, co-opt this process, introduce target antigens onto our cells, and instead of making CAR T cells, make CAR thymic cells, and be able to train the human body to be tolerant against any target antigen, could we use that to then treat the myriad of autoimmune conditions that are out there? That's how we would approach autoimmunity, is helping to take this innate process and target it against something that we know has gone wrong.
And that would also work against organ transplant rejection in a very similar way.
That's right. In terms of the organ tolerance or transplant rejection application, you know, the nuance there is kind of figuring out H-line matching between our lines and the donor organ. But in principle, and this actually has been shown clinically in humans, where, you know, folks have actually co-transplanted human thymus with heart from the same donor into a recipient, and showed that the new thymus was able to train a new immune system in the recipient to be tolerant of the heart. But in that case, of course, you still have to use primary thymus. In our case, again, we can create this unlimited off-the-shelf supply of thymic cells to potentially create tolerance against, you know, a myriad of different organs and tissues. A lot of kind of work we have to do to get to that point, but that is the concept and principle.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, if you transplant an organ and the thymus at the same time, then yeah, as long as the person is young enough, right, so they still have a thymus. Do we know why the thymus? Because the thymus kind of starts involuting at a very young age, right? Do we know why it has such a short lifespan? Because it seems like it would be evolutionarily helpful to have it for a while.
To be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that myself. It is a fascinating question that I know many incredibly intelligent in the field are continuing to ask and press on. Because if we look at for example, other species from birds to fishes, you can see that thymic involution is not a linear process. It can actually be a cyclical process where with migrational patterns, with seasons, you can have the thymus kind of come on and off over the lifespan of, say, a bird or a fish. So that's fascinating. And for humans, you know, could it be that early on in life, you create enough of a diverse repertoire, and if you try to do more, you could potentially drive folks more on the autoimmune side of things? Unknown. That's just something that the field does not know. But what we do see is that later on in life, as we lose not only thymus, but then all the other components of the immune system, naturally folks are beginning to ask the question of, okay, then what if we could come in and start to reconstitute those different aspects of the immune system that have been lost? And of course, one of those key parts is the thymus.
Right. And we still have enough like T cells in the bone marrow coming, like arriving to be programmed, I assume.
That's an interesting question where, depending on where someone is on the aging spectrum and kind of their own capacity of bone marrow production, could this be a strategy of addressing the thymic side, but also being needing to address the bone marrow side? Yes, it is a fascinating question that I think we'll have to continue to explore over time.